for the sake of continuity, and yet I'm going to move on slightly this evening. I'm not going to deal with the subject of swearing and blasphemy this evening. I'm going to move on to the next passage, which will be from verse 38 down to verse 42. And tonight we'll be looking at the subject of human rights. Human rights and responsibilities and the right to retaliation. So we're going to read from Matthew chapter 5, and we'll read from verse 33. We're going to look then at verse 38 to verse 42 of Matthew chapter 5. And if there ever was a verse to antagonize liberals, and you want to antagonize a liberal, just say an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and they won't like it. Some time ago, I was listening to a radio debate, and the radio debate involved the four main church leaders: Presbyterian, the Church of Ireland, the Methodist, and the Roman Catholic. And they were waxing lyrical on this. It was a BBC interview. So they were given a reasonably easy time. So they talked on at great length about reconciliation. And they talked on about peace. And they talked on about great social issues like community cohesion. It was only when they came to the very last question in the interview that they got stuck. For the interviewer took them by surprise, and having had a really easy interview, he said to them, "Now, how do you four church leaders reconcile all the slaughter and death in the Old Testament, all the retribution, all of the commands by God to go out and slay nations and conquer peoples? How do you reconcile that with your message of love and peace and reconciliation?" You'd have thought they'd been hit with a hammer. Such a bit of spluttering and waffling, trying to explain away the Old Testament, even to the extent that they gave one of them, at least, gave the distinct impression, if he didn't exactly say it, he gave the distinct impression that the Old Testament God was hardly the God of the New Testament whom we worship. That's an ancient heresy. Marcionism. They believed that the wrathful Hebrew God was a separate lower entity than the all-forgiving God of the New Testament. In fact, in that interview, the only church leader who came out with any decent credibility at all was the Methodist president of that day, who almost gave the right answer. It was when he asked that question, and he brought up the subject of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, that the interviewer completely floored them. As one of them said, "If we apply the principle of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, what we'll be left with is a society where everyone is blind." And yet Jesus quotes this as a biblical principle. Remember, all the way through the Sermon on the Mount, the parts we have been reading so far, Jesus has taken biblical principles and he has stated them, and then he has expounded upon them, and then he has applied what he has taught to the hearts and lives of his disciples. So why does he take this one? An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Remember, there's three different types of law. We've been talking about the three applications of the law. But remember also, there's three different categories of law in the Old Testament. There's the moral law, the code of ethics. There's a ceremonial law that regulated worship in the ancient Israelite religious economy. There's the moral law, there's the ceremonial law, and then there was the civil law. Civil law made for an ordered society in Israel. And this verse, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, that the liberals hate so much, which they wrest out of context in order to condemn it, is a very important law. In fact, it's mentioned three times in the Old Testament, in the law, in the Pentateuch. Exodus chapter 21 and verse 23. It tells us that if any harm follows any injury, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Leviticus 24 verse 19 tells us that if a man should happen to fight with someone, strive with them, and disfigure them, then the same thing shall be done to them. In fact, it talks about fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. In Deuteronomy chapter 19, which we look at in a wee minute, in verse 21, it tells us that your eye shall not pity. Life for life. And there you are, the thing we were talking about when we looked at murder. Life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. Now this is civil law for the ordering of Israelite society. And it's a law that makes a lot of sense. Let me tell you why. Because this law was a limitation on redress. The opposite to this law, or the alternative back in the time of Israelite society, back in the ancient world, is a thing called progressive retribution. Progressive retribution is the... Let me put it to you like this. Let me illustrate it for you. This would be the easiest way to explain it. Supposing you knocked off my wing mirror of my car. You were reversing out of the car park tonight, and you knocked off one of my beautiful wing mirrors of my Fiesta van. I wouldn't be very happy. So I'd go out and kick your car door in. You wouldn't like that. So you'd come round to my house and you'd set my car on fire. Oh, I'd be incensed by that. So I'd come round to your house and burn it down. You'd come round to... And you see how that would build up? I'd start taking revenge on you, and you'd start taking revenge on me, and eventually there would be a feud that would build and build and build, and there would be no justice for anyone. It would go on and on, each party getting more aggressive and more hurt being caused until someone or several people were killed, and there'd be an all-out feud, a war that followed. And so the statute of an eye for an eye regulated that retribution was limited to direct redress for what was inflicted or damaged. But there's more to it than that, and I want you to turn to Deuteronomy chapter 19 for to find out what it is. Because not only did this limit the way that we were able to take redress, there was a restriction on the way that this could be applied. Deuteronomy chapter 19, and look at verse 15. See what it says. Here's how this law gets applied. At verse 21, actually, is the verse that draws this to the conclusion. So we're going to start with verse 16. If a false witness rise up against any man to testify against him that which is wrong, then both the men between whom the controversy is shall stand before the Lord, before the priests and the judges, which shall be in those days. And the judges shall make different inquisition, diligent inquisition, make inquiries, it'll be like detectives. And behold, if the witness is a false witness and hath testified falsely against his brother, then shall ye do unto him as he hath thought to do unto his brother. So shalt thou put the evil away from among you. And those which remain shall hear and fear, and shall henceforth commit no more any such evil among you. And thine eye shall not pity, but life shall go for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. Do you see how this was regulated? Let's go back to my illustration. Supposing I was applying this principle of an eye for an eye, and you damaged my car and knocked off my wing mirror, I couldn't go round to your house and say, by the way, you've damaged my wing mirror, I'm going to damage your wing mirror. I would have to go to a court. I'd have to go to the judge here. The judges in verse 18 are involved. And the judges make diligent inquiries. They will bring forth witnesses. They will bring forth the people who were in the church. And they will say to them, did you see Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so reversing into his car and knocking off the wing mirror? I did. And did you see it? I did. Then you must pay for that. He has the right to remove your wing mirror. So it was restricted. I couldn't just go round to your house and demand retribution. It had to be done decently and in order. It had to be brought before the judges. It could only be enacted by a judge or civil authority. The right of redress is not the prerogative of one of the injured parties. In Israel, the judgment of disputes was based upon Deuteronomy chapter 19. Thirdly, here's another reason why this was a good law. As time went on, people began to realize that there was sometimes situations when there wasn't a practical application of it. The rabbis in Jesus' day were fairly unanimous in applying this law in financial terms. Let me put it to you like this. In Ulster here, we have a thing called a good dig in the gob. Did you ever get one? Well, mais a time I got one at school, but I haven't had one since. And do you know there was a situation once where somebody hit me a good dig in the gob and I lost a tooth. Now, I have the right to do the same thing to that man. So what do? I take him to the judges, and they sit in the judges, and they sit in judgment, and they adjudicate on the matter, and they say, this man here has lost a tooth. An eye for an eye and a tooth for the tooth is the rule, the regulation. So you have lost a tooth. And this man here, he has hit you on the mouth and he has caused you that injury. So now we must remove a tooth from him. Open your mouth. And what do you find? He's got no teeth. None at all. Well, what are we going to do? We're going to make him pay for it. So the principle of compensation arose. Instead, the rabbis would allow people to pay compensation. A man who needed medical help, his assailant would pay for that help. If a man harms another man, that man's unable to work, it is right that the person who caused the harm should compensate his victim for his loss of income. So we have a limitation of redress. We have a restriction of application to the courts. We have an establishment of a principle of compensatory payment. In fact, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth is a valuable statement of human rights. Do you know our legal system is based on this? If you go to the High Court and you demand compensation, this is the principle that they will use. Some time ago, I was involved in a car accident. It wasn't my fault. Way back, a number of years ago, I had to go to Coleraine Courthouse and stand before I didn't get into the judge, but we stood, two injured parties, me and the person who was involved in the accident. And the way it was worked out was that the barrister for me and the barrister for him got together, and they said, look, my barrister said, well, look, here's the way this affected my client. He's lost a week's work because he's self-employed and he didn't have a car. Here's the way, here's what he's lost. He's lost, let's put it down to a couple of £100. So then he lost his access payment for the money that he had to pay the insurance company. That had to be paid. Then he had to pay, and he went through a little list, ticked off all the boxes, drew a line, came to about £600 or so. That's the payment he'll get. What does your client need? Well, my client has a sore back. He'll need 10,000. So there you are. That's the way it was worked out. The principle of compensation is based on an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. That is a statement of human rights. Now, whenever the liberals look at this, they take it out of its context. They don't remember that it was there, and they condemn this as being a law that no one will want to keep, a law that's out of its, totally taken out of its context. But remember, this law is given to the people of God in the Old Testament. It's given to people who understand God's mercy. It's given to them so that they do not injure each other more than the compensation should allow. It's given to them in the context of the mercy of God in redeeming his people. The sin of those who reject his mercy by injuring others. The mercy offered to those who repent. The necessary recompense to maintain fellowship and reconciliation among the people. This is a law that is a merciful law. So far from being the spiteful, vengeful diktat of the angry God of the New Old Testament, of the liberals, this is a law of great comfort. For you will know that if you injure someone, then your compensation will not be excessive. It's a law that will benefit society. It's a law that lays down basic legal precedents which have lasted to this very day. It is a law that sets out our human rights. It's very important that I got that over to you. I like to use a wee bit of humour occasionally to drive a point home. It's a very, very important point. And the reason it's an important point is as soon as we have established the principle that you have your rights under the law, Jesus takes those rights from you. If that was the law, if that was the principle of human rights defined, then the very next verse, verse 39, is your human rights declined. For in verse 39, Jesus says this, "But I say unto you that ye resist not evil." Let's be very careful here. This is probably resist not the one who is evil, an evil person. That's the underlying principle. The world has its rights. We have our rights. The world loudly demands that our rights be respected. But the Christian is to be like Christ. And Christ gave up all his rights. He gave up heavenly splendor. He gave up his throne and his crown, and he came into this world and he humbled himself by coming into this world as a baby to die on to be born in a manger and to live a life wandering without a home, to be ministering to people, to be sinlessly perfect, to go to the cross and to humble himself. He was falsely accused. False witnesses brought against him. He was wrongly convicted for us. And yet, like a sheep led to the slaughter, he opened not his mouth. He did not demand his rights. John Calvin comments that the best interpreter of this passage that we have is the Apostle Paul, who who enjoins us rather to overcome evil by good than contend with evildoers. Romans chapter 12 and verse 20 tells us that if your enemy is hungry, you are to feed him. If he is thirsty, you are to give him something to drink. For in doing so, you will heap coals of fire upon his head. We are not to be overcome by evil, but to overcome evil with good. Christians have rights, but we are to be Christ-like. And Jesus laid aside his rights for you and me. And that's going to be very difficult for us, for we like having our rights. We liked having our rights and we protested. We protested at Drumcree. We protested our doing. We protest. We demand our rights, and we're right to demand our rights. But we're to be like Christ. And instead of protesting, perhaps the right course would be to apply this teaching in the way that Jesus does. Because having told us what we are to do, having told us the principle of human rights, he then tells us that we're to decline those rights as he did. And then he gives us the application. What should we do when we have the right to retaliate? Well, let's look very briefly at it, for we're running out of time. Look at verse 39 again. I say to you that ye resist not evil. Here's the first of four. But whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other. You'll often hear Christians saying, turn the other cheek, brother. But that's just leaving something out. This is the right cheek. Someone hits you in the right cheek. Presumably, most people are right-handed in the world. If they're going to hit you in the right cheek, they're going to have to hit you with the back of their hand. If they hit you with they hit you a slap with your hand, they're going to hit you in the left cheek. And Jesus is very, very specific. It's the right cheek. And there's a reason for that. The reason for that is that to slap someone with the back of the hand on the right cheek is an insult, isn't it? When you go back to Victorian times and you hear of people doing duels, they would insult them first. They would take their glove and they would slap them across the cheek. That's an insult. What do you do when people insult you? It's not a punch. Not something intended to physically harm you. This is an insult. A calculated, deliberate insult. What would you do? Don't rise to it. Don't rise to it. Don't accept the challenge. Take the insult. Take it twice. Don't worry about your feelings being hurt. Doesn't matter about your feelings. Walk away. And think when you're doing it how much of an insult it was to God. That when we were in our sins, we rejected his mercy. We took the benefits of his common grace and we took them with the same haughtiness as those who would give him a slap on the cheek. And yet despite that, he loved us and he forgave us. We were insulted. Sometimes our rights are legal rights. And here Jesus turns to that and look at verse 40. He says, if any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak. Also, a very important New Testament law was that you could not take away a man's coat, his cloak, his outer garment, his overcoat, because that was not just a garment to wear when he went out of the house. That was what kept him warm at night. They didn't have duvets in those days. They wrapped themselves in a coat and that kept them warm. And a man would only have one coat. His coat is vital for his life. It's his protection against the weather. It's his blanket against the cold. And in the Bible, if a man gives you his cloak as a pledge, that you must return it to him by nightfall. That's a legal right. It's laid out in Deuteronomy 24 and verse 12. that if you take a man's pledge, you must return the pledge to him when the sun goes down, so that he may sleep in his own garment. What would you do? What would I do? You demand our rights. I've got my legal rights. You're not getting my protective garment. Jesus says, no. He says in verse 40, if any man's going to take away your coat, give him your cloak as well. In verse 41, he talks about our duty to others when required of it. Sometimes we don't like doing our duty. Like when we have an employer who's a wee bit cantankerous, or maybe who demands more of us than he should. Jesus talks here about going a mile with someone. Israel, of course, a state under Roman rule. And under Roman law, a soldier could order a civilian to carry his pack up to a maximum of 1 mile. And the Jews absolutely hated this. They resented being made to bear the burden of a soldier who was an uninvited colonist in their land. And they grumbled about it, and they complained about it. And so would I. If someone gave me a soldier's pack to carry and said, carry that for a mile, I don't think I would last more than a few steps with the weight. Jesus says, when someone asks you to do something for them, and you must do it, don't do it complaining and protesting unwillingly. Be willing to go even further. If your boss says to you, stay behind tonight, do a bit of extra work. Oh, but I finish at 5. Stay behind for him. Help him out. Applies to your work life. And the last example Jesus gives is in verse 42. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn thy not thy away. Now, we're to give when people ask. That's a difficult one, isn't it? Because sometimes we know that in giving to people, we're not actually helping them. There was an appeal that went out on the radio a couple of years ago. People had been giving money to vagrants in the streets in Belfast, and some of the aid organisations that worked with them were coming on the radio and saying, please stop doing that. Don't give them money, because it's not helping them. It's just filling them with alcohol. Some time ago, a man came into a church that I was the pastor of at the time, and he was a tramp, a vagrant, and he was looking for some money. And of course, under the constitution of the church, there was a fund set up that we could give money to those in need. But the elders got together and they said, no, we're not giving him any money. We'll give him a sandwich. We'll give him a meal. If we give him money, he'll buy alcohol with it. Let's give him something else instead that would be more benefit to him. But when someone asks, we're to help them. So the application is very simple. The Christian has rights like everybody else. Human rights. But when it comes to human rights, Jesus said, think about the Lord Jesus. Consider Christ, who gave up all his rights for you. And when someone insults you, turn the other cheek. And when someone undermines you legally, then give him what he wants. And when duty calls, go the second mile. And if someone asks you for something, willingly give it to them. Now, I don't know about you, but I would put this verse and these verses and the next little section under the title, Hard Sayings of Jesus. Because we will need much grace and much wisdom to be able to put this passage into practice in our own lives. And we will need great discernment to know when we should stand on our rights and when we should do what Jesus says. In this occasion here, and he tells us, that we resist not the one who is evil. So a Christian who has been redeemed by the atoning blood of Christ will not be looking for redress from somebody who insults us. And he'll not stand upon his legal rights, and he'll be certain to go beyond the call of duty and to be charitable when he can be.